He said an intruder had killed his wife and tortured him with a blowtorch. Thankfully for her, the data doesn't lie. This is the story of Connie DeBate, the Connecticut mom whose Fitbit helped solve her murder. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here. I'm a Midwesterner who now lives in New York City, putting my writing degree to use by researching true crime cases that interest me, and hopefully you. And hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. On the morning of December 23rd, 2015, Richard DeBate called 911 to report the death of his 39-year-old wife. He said he walked their kids to the bus stop and then went back home to their beautiful four-bedroom colonial to get his work shirt. His wife was getting ready for her YMCA fitness class, and then he set off again. But then he got an alert that the family's alarm system had been triggered, so he emailed his supervisor from the car to say he was going to check on it. When he arrived home, he found the masked man who had broken into their house waiting for him in his walk-in closet. The 6'2" stranger was wearing camouflage clothes, a mask, and gloves, and had a Vin Diesel type of voice. The man tied him to a chair, tortured him with a blowtorch, and stabbed him with a box cutter. And that was bad enough, but Richard's wife Connie's fate would be worse. She came home from her spin class at the worst possible time. Richard said he called out to her, told her to run, but the masked man followed her to the basement and shot her. Richard was lucky to escape the same fate by wrestling with the intruder and burning his face with the blowtorch. The man fled the house, and Richard made that 911 call just after 10 a.m. while still half-strapped to the chair. Richard DeBate and Connie Margotta met through a mutual friend and married in 2003. They lived in Ellington, Connecticut, between Hartford and Springfield with their two boys. RJ and Connor were only 9 and 6 years old when they lost their mom. Connie's obituary called her the beloved wife and best friend of Richard. A friend said they were a really solid couple, a really together couple that had made it work. He was a network administrator, she was a pharmaceutical sales rep, and to the outside world, it appeared that they couldn't keep their eyes off each other. He was funny and she was kind, and although they were different, they seemed to really like and respect each other. When troopers first arrived on the scene of the crime, they found smoke from the blowtorch, a trail of blood leading to Connie's body, and 39-year-old Richard with some, shall we say, superficial wounds. Connie, meanwhile, was shot in the head and torso. A friend said that she was a wonderful person and he couldn't think of anyone who would hurt her on purpose. Richard wrote on Facebook, "Many questions unanswered, but we are all doing our best to move forward, as impossible as it seems." But maybe Connie knew something. As the investigation into her death continued, the Hartford Courant reported in April 2016 that Connie had called the police back in October the year before. Someone had stuffed yellow rags into the exhaust pipe of her vehicle, and she thought she knew who it was. Richard called the cops a week later to report that someone had cracked the windshield of his car, and he thought it was the same person. Although, weirdly, the windshield was smooth to the touch on the outside, meaning the damage had been done from the inside. Richard said he'd bought a security camera but hadn't had the chance to set it up. Convenient. Connie and Richard suspected a certain person, and a trooper went to talk to that person. But at the time, the police report was heavily redacted and no one was named. In a recent Dateline episode, though, neighbors say that it was a contractor who had failed to complete some work for Richard and Connie. The couple took him to small claims court, and the case was settled for a few $1,000s, but the locals believed he was harboring some bad feelings. I was, of course, very disappointed to hear that everyone suspected the contractor because the very dramatic part of me figured that the culprit was Richard's girlfriend. Because, oh yeah, Richard had a girlfriend, and she was pregnant. In April 2017, it was revealed that one night, Richard texted his pregnant girlfriend that he was totally getting a divorce and signed off, "I'll see you tomorrow, my little love nugget." And then the next day, his wife Connie was shot twice with the .357 Magnum he bought 2 months earlier. Richard said she must have gotten it out of the safe to defend herself. His girlfriend gave birth to their daughter 2 months later. And basically, even though it took more than a year to pin him down, the authorities suspected Richard from the beginning. Apparently, the first red flag popped up, like, immediately. The morning of the murder, the state police brought three search dogs to the house to sniff out the trail of the supposed intruder after Richard called 911. But they only smelled his scent. And in fact, one of the dogs actually followed his nose to the ambulance where Richard was waiting to be taken to the hospital to treat his superficial injuries. That's how little intruder scent there was at the scene. Police also say Richard's story kept changing when they interviewed him about what happened, and his tales didn't line up with what the security system showed. It also didn't look great for him that he tried to cash in on Connie's life insurance policy just days after she was killed, along with taking nearly $100,000 out of her investment account. Apparently, this wasn't the first time either. There was a note found on Connie's phone entitled, "Why I Want a Divorce," that listed many, many reasons, such as Richard not caring for her and the kids. But one of the reasons was that Richard took money that didn't belong to him. He actually opened up a credit card in Connie's name before her murder that he used to pay for strip club visits, motel stays, and flowers for his girlfriend. Now, Richard said that getting his girlfriend pregnant was actually Connie's idea in a way. He said he'd gone to school with the woman. They were such close friends that she'd done a reading at his wedding to Connie. He'd been dating her since her recent divorce, and Connie knew it. Both women wanted a baby, so he impregnated this girlfriend with the plan that they would all co-parent the child. But Connie's family was like, absolutely not. So then Richard changed his story and admitted that the pregnancy was accidental. His girlfriend, although she was a reluctant witness, confirmed that Connie wasn't aware of the baby. None of this looked good for Richard, but his real problem was right there on Connie's wrist. Detectives had the data from her Fitbit fitness tracker, and it told an entirely different story on the day of the murder than the one Richard was trying to sell them. It was about 125 feet from the garage to the basement, so if Connie came home and was immediately killed, she should have walked about 125 feet. But when Connie arrived home from spin class, her band showed that she walked over 1,200 feet. She was obviously not killed right away. And Richard said she was killed around 9 a.m., but her Fitbit showed her moving for an hour after that. I mean, she had even been posting to Facebook at 9:46 a.m., so there's no way she was dead at 9. It's kind of funny because usually it's husbands posting on Facebook to make it seem like their wives are still alive, you know? Also, Richard had told that story about leaving for work and getting the security alarm alert, but detectives found that the alarm system had been activated from Richard's own key fob, from the basement of his home. And when he emailed his boss, quote-unquote, from the road to say he had to go back home because the alarm system had been triggered, the email was sent from the IP address of his house. According to his phone's location tracker, he never left home at all. When he was supposedly fighting off an intruder, he was actually listening to ESPN Sports Radio and sitting around Googling tattoo ideas on his laptop. And just one last thing. Richard's shirt had gunshot residue on it the morning of the murder, even though he supposedly only heard the gunshot and wasn't nearby when it happened. He was charged with murder, tampering with evidence, and providing a false statement. He was released on $1 million bond after his family said they would sell 5 pieces of real estate to pay for it. In a 2022 trial that involved more than 100 witnesses, the now 45-year-old Richard was found guilty of all 3 charges.
A mistress, a pregnancy. Was this okay with Connie? Bonet says jurors weren't buying the statement debate gave to investigators at the hospital the day of Connie's murder, that she couldn't get pregnant, so the pair had come up with another plan.
And so they were approaching that in a very unconventional way.
A sperm donor.
Yes, a sperm donor.
And he was going to be the sperm donor.
A sperm donor to his longtime friend, Sarah Ganser, who debate told investigators he and Connie agreed could act as a surrogate and that he impregnated in the traditional sense.
All of us were like, no matter, you know, how gracious you are and no matter how much you want a child, we couldn't swallow that Connie would be okay with, an ongoing affair.
And there was more doubt. How could DeBate leave his dead wife in the home without even checking on her? In this court audio recording obtained by NBC Connecticut, state prosecutor Matthew Gadansky asked DeBate the same thing.
You laid there because that's where you wanted to be found.
No, sir.
And you never went to your wife.
No.
You never checked on her.
I didn't.
You never asked anybody to check on her.
I didn't.
He told the jury that he loved 2 women and he didn't want to push either of them away. but prosecutors said he was a ticking bomb running out of time. He and Connie were talking about divorce, like how it would work with the kids. But in the meantime, they went on a romantic weekend trip to Vermont to see if they could fix things. Connie posted photos of their time together, and Richard's girlfriend confronted him about them. She's weeks away from giving birth to their kid, being told that he's definitely working on ending his marriage, and she's seeing his wife gush about their love online. Richard had to have been feeling the pressure, and a cousin said he was worried about being the black sheep of their Italian family and the community if he got a divorce. Murder must have seemed like a better alternative to him. Richard was sentenced to 65 years in prison and is scheduled to be released in 2087. He and his girlfriend, Sarah Ganser, broke up for good in 2019, and she filed for sole custody of their daughter. Richard has appealed his conviction and still claims innocence. The thing that really gets me about this case is that Connie's Fitbit showed she took almost a quarter of a mile of steps after coming home. It just makes me wonder what she was doing in their home that morning. Like, did she have any idea what was coming? The day before she was killed, she texted Richard, "You lied to me again." Apparently, there was some dispute about the cable bill. And it makes me think, was she just doing the dishes or washing the clothes and going about her day while he was getting ready to shoot her from behind? Or did she know what her husband was capable of? I'll never get over the fact that after Connie's death, Richard wrote that thing on Facebook about how they were trying to move forward, as impossible as that seemed. He also wrote that he was worried about how his sons would fare in the wake of her murder, the murder that he committed. He also said that he and Connie balanced each other out, and he worried about his ability to make the best possible decisions without her in his life. I'll bet her family wishes they could take back the part of her obituary that called her his beloved wife and best friend. Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.